we need a way to think about these hypercubes. So that's supposed to be the power set and the set of elements between 1 and n. And if, on the other hand, you look at this hypercube, well, what does it consist of? What do the elements look like? It's pretty simple. It's just corners of a cube. And there's a set corresponding to one of those n tuples where, well, A is a subset of that guy, and an element is in I. If and only if corresponding entry here is 1. Okay? So, that's how it's defined. And you can use this to set up a an isomorphism of posets and this is how we think of this. In particular, yeah, I just showed you what, if you have a subset and it corresponds to an n-tuple such that the ith entry is 1 if I is in A and 0 otherwise, okay, so the n-tuple is just marking out the elements in A. Right, so if you have a finite ordered set, this thing is a perfectly good way of thinking of, A is canonically isomorphic to this ordered set of numbers between 1 and n, which is order preserving. Of course, this is provided to A as cardinality n. All right, now I want to talk about the sort of morphisms that come up in this box category in these terms, okay? Here's some examples. Let's take subsets of a fixed ordered set C. Okay, it has cardinality n. Sorry. So called interval of subsets of C between A and V. Well, it's a subset of the power set of C, and it's all subset E such that A is in E and E is in B. This can be contained in E. Okay? The moral of that, you can see directly, is that there's an isomorphism of posets like this. Okay. Now, this is an interval of subsets. Okay. And this interval of subsets certainly sits inside all the subsets of C. So there's an inclusion of posets like this. and you're to think of this as a tool face. This is a legitimate map inside the box category, and it corresponds to taking faces somewhere. Okay, so this is right. All right, now here's a second example of the sorts of things we're interested in. Let's suppose that B is a non-empty subset of a set C. Again, C is a totally ordered finite set. You could use intersection to define a perfectly good poset morphism from this power set to that power set, okay? And this is a co-degeneracy. And now the box category is the category with objects. Let me write it that way, where n is greater than or equal to 0. And with morphisms, well, which is generated. I'm sorry. Well, I should say generated by cofaces. Co-degeneracy is subject to the relations that come up when you try to compose them. Okay? That's the box category. Let's give some simple examples here. So let's suppose we're inside some set C. Finite, totally ordered set.
If epsilon n is the n above 2.
I'm sorry?
A epsilon n, the n above
2. Yep, very same. Okay. So C is some finite, totally ordered set, say a cardinality n. And let's take an element inside C, okay? This determines two intervals in C, namely all the subsets of C which contain I, that's one of these intervals, okay? And all of the subsets C once you remove I, okay? Now, so here you're talking about all the subsets which contain the entry I, and let me write this way. This inclusion of intervals corresponds to the ith coface with one in the ith place, right? And here this means you don't want the ith element to be in subset, so it corresponds to this inclusion of intervals, okay? So the ith cofaces correspond to inclusions of special sorts of intervals inside the power set corresponding to the set C. So another way of thinking this, thinking about this. Epsilon here is either 0 or 1, I is between 1 and n. And this gamma I is either 0 or 1, depending on what subset of this you're talking about. And what this d upper I epsilon does is put epsilon in the I place. So it's kind of like a traditional definition of the upper face. You're talking about either the top or bottom of the I minus 1 face in, you know, the respective dimension. Okay. Now, second example. Again with a set C, totally ordered finite set. Determines a post-set map. From subsets of C to subsets of C minus J, okay? And the post-set map, of course, is subset A to that part of the intersection with C that you get by throwing away J, okay? And if you were to write this out, since what I mean by S upper J, we identify this with a hypercube, and that was a hypercube. And here are the respective hypercubes. And if this is a string of ones and zeros, then S upper J just deletes the J's entry. That element's no longer important. The element that that coordinate corresponds to is dropped. Okay, so I got a description of this box category. It's a subcategory of the post-set mass between the various hypercubes, which is generated by these co-phases and co-degeneracies. And a cubical set. Just a contravariant function defined on this box category, taking values and sets. Now, and of course, the category of cubical sets is natural transformations between these functors. Yeah. Maybe, but I haven't thought about it that way. See, it's not the hypercubes themselves that are important, it's the maps between them. Okay? I don't know how to describe that there. Okay. Yeah, a cubical set morphism of cubical sets. So if X is one of these guys, then it's assigning a set to each one of these hypercubes. I typically write that and call it the set of n cells of X. Okay? Now we need lots of examples. Oh, by the way, I should have said at the beginning that these notes are nearing final form. I put a version of them on my website, and you will find them at my webpage. Is that they're still going to, the notes for this lecture series are going to change, you know, for a few days yet, but this is close enough to final form they can be read. All right. So, what are the examples? The so-called standard N cell. This is like the standard N simplex and simplicial sets, okay, and it's a representable functor. And I write this, and of course it's morphisms in the box category. It's not all are scored maps between the various hypercubes. And of course, if you have an N cell, it's classified by a map, cubical set map from the standard N cell to X. This is the DNA lemma again. And so I think of N cells in a set X as cubical set maps that look like this. Now, there are cofaces, right? And if you look in ancient texts, you know, where people used to describe cubical sets this old way in terms of faces and degeneracies and relations between them, this composite corresponds to taking the ith face in the ith coordinate, well, taking the face in the ith coordinate corresponding to whether you're at the top or the bottom of the box, okay? And there's a similar story this is traditional notation for precomposing the N cell with this coface or codegeneracy, and this is the J degeneracy vector. And you know, a lot of the things that you've seen with simplicial sets kind of work out here too. For example, X is non-degenerate if and only if it isn't in the image of one of these degeneracies. Okay. N cell has a boundary. This is the boundary of the standard N cell. And it's the union of the images of the coface maps okay, but it's missing that top generating cell, so it really is a boundary when you realize it. But another way of seeing it, there's a little co-equalizer. Let me just write it down. Like so. It's a co-equalizer in the category of cubical sets. This is a way of talking about the piece of the standard N cell is generated by all the co-faces and nothing else. By all the faces, rather, nothing else. Secondly, you can talk about the piece of the boundary that you get by dropping a face. You have to be specific about what one. This is the piece of the boundary that you get by dropping the face in coordinate I, which is either top or bottom, depending on what epsilon is, okay? And again, it can be described by a co-equalizer. Let me not write it this way. Indexed over a bunch of pairs not equal to I epsilon. And the rest of the structure comes from the intersections of the faces, and I don't care to describe how it's done. So this is the This is like the boundary of a standard simplex. This is like one of the horns. Except that there's more than one face to throw away in coordinate I. All right. Maybe four now. These are posets, right? So posets, and they have associated to them other categories, so you can take a nerve. You get a simplicial setback. Well, if you think about what you're doing, the standard T-cell has this T-cell appearing as a top cell, and it has these vertices in the four faces, okay? And what you do when you take the nerve of the corresponding hypersquare is you put in an extra one face and pick up these two triangles as top cells in the thing, okay? So this is like a triangulation of that hypercube. That's the way to think about it. Now, what you get out of the deal then is a contravariant functor from the box category into simplicial sets that you get by taking nerves. Okay? And you can use that to define a singular functor. I start with a simplicial set. I can get a typical set out of it whose n cells are the morphisms of simplicial sets. From nerve of this hypercube into X. And of course the cubical structure is induced by precomposition with box morphisms. And so you get a perfectly good functor from simplicial sets to cubical sets that way. And I tend to call this the cubical singular functor. You can do the same thing with topological spaces, of course. If X was a topological space, you wanted to define something like that. You'd be talking about continuous maps from the realization of this into X. Okay, so it's a cubical singular function for topological spaces, if you like. And of course has an adjoint. From simplicial sets, I'm sorry, it goes from cubic S delta, or S box, goes from simplicial sets to cubical sets, and the realization goes from cubical sets to simplicial sets. And what is this thing? Well, there is a category, a cell category, for cubical set X. The objects are the cells, and the morphisms are the incidence relations between the cells. Okay, so this is an analog of the simplex category that one normally sees in simplicial sets. And this realization yeah as a definition that's analogous to realization of a simplicial set in topological spaces. You have this functor that I call B, and you use it to define the realization with co-limits in this way. And it's left adjoint to a singular functor. It's a type of realization functor, but I call it triangulation. And you can see why I have a picture up there. Okay. You have a small category. It has a cubical nerve. This is maybe not the most enlightened way to define a nerve of a category in cubical sets, but it does as a first approximation. This is a cubical nerve. And the end cells of this are the functors. From the various hypercubes into the category C. Okay. So that's another source of cubical sets. And that's a good list of examples. Yeah. I haven't met that one. There's functors all over the place, but I'm not sure about that. This is kind of meant to tell you that cubical sets are everywhere, even though you may have thought so. Like I said, there's a good notion of skeleton for cubical sets. Okay, and the skeleton of a cubical set is a subobject of X. It's a cubical set again, and it's generated. By the cells in degrees of 2 Euclidean. Okay? And the thing things you're used to from simplicial sets, namely the skeletal filtration for a simplicial set, work equally well here in the sense that there's a pushout. Where these disjoint unions are indexed over the non-degenerate cells in degree n, okay? And this gives you a skeletal filtration. And of course, when you push all of this into topological spaces by realizing there, what you get for realization of this thing is an n cell, but it's got this funny triangulation, and this realizes its boundary. So this gives you a CW complex structure. On the realization of the cubical set in topological spaces. Okay, so every cubical set is a CW complex of some kind eventually. But the triangulation behaves the same way, of course, because it's got a right adjoint, so it's going to preserve pushouts like this. All right. Write down some definitions in a theorem. So vibration of cubical sets is a monomorphism. Okay. Secondly, mass of typical sets is weak equivalence. If and only if the induced map on realizations is a weak equivalence, either in simplicial sets or equivalent weak topological spaces. Okay. Now, certainly we had standard N cells, and we had their boundaries and pieces of their boundaries. So the maps that look like inclusions of horns and simplices are these inclusions of open boxes and full boxes, okay? And P from X to Y is vibration, if and only if P has the right lifting property with respect to all inclusions of open boxes and boxes, okay? Theorem. And when I state it like this, particularly the description of vibration, with these dots, this is a theorem of Sierpinski. With these definitions, typical sets is the structure of a closed proper closed model category. And secondly, triangulation and singular functor set up equivalent equivalence between cubical sets and simplicial sets. I'm not going to prove this. Let me say this. Any donkey, and I was one of them, can get a closed model structure in cubical sets such as these two. Hold, you know, the vibrations that are what they are, defined by lifting property. But to actually get the vibrations to be the map which satisfy right lifting property with these sorts of inclusions, that's the real theorem here. And as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the deepest theorems in abstract homotopy theory. Okay, have a look at Sierpinski's thesis and see what I mean. Alternatively, I wrote it up in a paper called. I'm not sure. No, no, it's by far, you know, it's far away from being that.
Yeah. I wonder if this functor may be so good that it preserves
Yeah, well, I think something like that's true, yeah. I left out an adjective here. Okay. Let me explain why I left it out. Let me give you an example. And so far as I'm concerned, this is the example that probably shut down the development of cubical homotopy theory for decades. And it's this. You can take product of an interval with itself in cubical sets, and you can ask what its homotopy type is. Okay? Now it's supposed to be contractible if the world were a nice place. However, I didn't do a very good job of defining what the box category morphisms were, but notice the diagonal is a map of posets from the interval to the box. Okay? This is not a box category morphism. But it's a perfectly good one cell of this cubical set, okay? Right. Secondly, if you go shopping around for non-degenerate two cells, there's the identity, but there's also the flip. Okay? Two non-degenerate two cells for this cubical set. Now you're looking at the non-degenerate two cells. You're looking at an extra non-degenerate one cell that did not appear in the boundary. Okay, and the moral is what does the realization look like as a topological space? Well, you glue these two cells together along their common boundary, so you're already talking about a sphere there, two sphere, and then you have this extra one cell going up to the middle, you know, across the equator somewhere. And the moral is that as a topological space, that's homotopy equivalent to a wedge of spheres. It's not contractible. Okay. So we have this model structure. Everything seems fine until you meet this. It doesn't respect products very well, okay? So there's what's that telling you? It's telling you that the box 1 is an interval.
Okay.
And this is what that product is. It's a product. I'm sorry, I should have written this. This is a product of two intervals in cubical sets. Okay, and I'm identifying the two cells. No, there's two cells here. Two non-degenerate two cells glued along the equator. So the way to think about this thing is you have your top and bottom two cell glued together along the equator, and you have this extra one cell crossing the equator. It's sort of intypical. And that's a wedge of circles, of spheres. Okay. Well, there's a six. So, what's the saying is that set theoretic products of cubical sets are very badly behaved. In particular, they aren't going to give you the product isn't going to give you a monoidal model structure here. So here's the fix. It's the so-called tensor product construction of Kahn. And you define a tensor product of two boxes to be a new box, you know, where the dimensions are right. And this is functorial. And so the tensor product of two cubical sets better respect the tensor products of the cells. And here you're indexing over the cells of X and the cells of Y. Okay? Fact. Realization of the tensor product as a simplicial set. It's isomorphic to the product of the realizations of X and Y. I should use the language I've been using. The triangulation of this cubical set as a simplicial set is the product of the triangulation.
Is construction
what do you mean by general?
for more general
Oh, fine. Okay. Now, I didn't say that cubical sets has a simplicial model structure. It has no such thing. It has a cubical model structure. This construction here plays the role of the pairing that you want to see in a something like a simplicial model structure. And there's a cubical function complex for X and Y cubical sets, and the N cells of this thing and the cubical set maps of that form. Okay? And you precompose with the obvious structure maps that you get. All right. And you need to know various things. I mean, this is a cubical model structure, so for example, you need to know that if I give you cofibrations of cubical sets, then this map here, this tensor product of the two cofibrations, is a cofibration. Which is trivial if either I or J is weak equivalents. Okay. All you have to, really all that's important here is that you show you have a cofibration. And the rest of it just comes from formal nonsense. Okay, so this structure on cubical sets is the model structure, the structure of a closed cubical model structure. Okay. Yeah, it is. Yeah, sure. Now, there's more of these cubical model structures in nature than you might think. In fact, they abound. For example, if X and Y are simplicial sets, you can form a cubical function complex. It's a cubical set which takes, has some of the properties of a function complex. And the nth cells of it set maps like that. Of course, is delta 1 is the n-fold product of delta 1 with itself is the nerve of that n-fold hypercube. Okay. So they're all over the place. There are many cubical function complexes in this life. In fact, I think there's more than there are simplicial ones. Let me try to justify that claim a little bit. I'm going to describe a very general machine. And this somehow is the big localization machine in the sky. And this is another one of Szymanski's innovations. So I'm going to describe it in a special case. So henceforth, A is going to be a small category. It's going to be a category of A sets. The morphisms are contravariant functors on A taking values in sets. Okay, so this is like pre-sheaves on A if you want to think of it that way. And the morphisms are natural transformations. So, obvious example. Certainly, if A is the ordinal number category, I'm talking about simplicial sets. If A is the box category, I'm talking about cubical sets. Suppose that A is a product of two categories where C is a small site. And what you're talking about there is pre-sheaves of B sets on C. Okay. So for example, B could be box categories, so you'd be talking about pre-sheaves of cubical sets. This is pre-sheaves of simplicial sets. But there's all sorts of other index categories around, right? Here's an entertaining one. This is pre-sheaves of cubical objects and simplicial sets. Okay? I could go on and on. But that's important. Okay? Things like that. All right, so in a general framework of A sets, X is a contravariant functor defined on A. You can pick up an object, talk about the members of that set of sections if you like. This is the set of A cells. And of course, for element A in the underlying category A, this is standard A cell represented by A. And every A cell can be identified with a map of A sets like this. This is just your native lemma again. Okay, so this classifies any cells in the sense of this, you need a lemma. Now, I've been talking about simplex category in the past. I've been talking about cell category for cubical sets. There's a corresponding thing in this level of generality. The cell category, and I'm going to start following Kaczynski's notation now. It's written this way. Its objects are the A cells and the morphisms. Well, this would be a morphism from this A cell to that A cell, and of course the transition comes from the category A itself. Okay. Now, you say that a morphism of A sets is a weak equivalence, simplicial weak equivalence. If you look at the corresponding cell categories, there's certainly a functor from the cell category for X to the cell category of Y induced by the map from X to Y, and that can be classified. These are perfectly good simplicial sets, and this map's a weak equivalence. If this map is a simplicial set, it's a weak equivalence. I call it a simplicial weak equivalence. Kaczynski calls it an infinity equivalence. But I like to remember what I'm doing. Okay. Yes.
And when you write I A of X, are you referring to
the category of cells?
Elements?
Of elements of X, yeah.
You don't have to be. Oh, I see the root of that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just a notation for representable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why would that be a good definition of weak equivalences? If X is a simplicial set, and the corresponding category of cells is its simplex category. You can look at X, and you can look at all the cells of X, one of these, pretty simplex if you like, and there's a canonical map from the homotopy colimit of the cells in simplicial sets to X. That's a weak equivalence, and that's just well known. At the same time, this maps canonically to the nerve of the underlying category, and that nerve of the underlying category is the simplex category. This is a homotopy colimit of points. This is a homotopy colimit of cells. The cells and the points have the same homotopy type, so this is a weak equivalence too. So a map is all natural, and so a map of simplicial sets is going to be a weak equivalence if and only if it induces weak equivalence on this level. Okay. Second example, let's take Y to be a cubical set. Here's Y, and of course it has lots of cells. But Y has a triangulation, and so do the cells. And there's a corresponding map like that. And in fact, the triangulation of Y is the homotopy colimit of the triangulation of the cells. But that's actually kind of a deep fact. It only comes out after the end of all this work you've done with Kaczynski. Because you need to know that this triangulation function takes weak equivalences of cubical sets to weak equivalences of simplicial sets. I built that into the definition, but that's not the way it's proved. And at the same time, it's homotopy colimit maps to the NURB of the cell category for the cubical set Y, and of course, you can always think you're contractible, so that's a weak equivalence. So a map of cubical sets is a weak equivalence if and only if it induces a weak equivalence of NURBs of the corresponding cell categories. Let me just write this down. The fact that that's a weak equivalence is somewhat hard to see, and it depends on this property of cubical sets that suggests it calls regularity, which amounts to that statement. Except that you're doing it on the cell category level. Okay. Now, I just want to give you an example of something here. Or at least a couple. Roughly when I say, I'm giving you an interval theory on the category of A sets, it's a pairing category of A sets with the Bosch category. It takes values in A sets and it satisfies a few assumptions. Now the examples are supposed to be the tensor product standard N cell in cubical sets, or secondly, for simplicial sets, picture like this, so is supposed to be an interval theory, whatever it does, but these both have a few nice properties that you take advantage of repeatedly. If I happen to be some A set with distinct zero cells, then the fact that you have two distinct zero cells there tells you that that pairing is an interval theory as well, but this time in A sets. Now what these interval theories are supposed to do is supposed to make some things easy. I haven't written them down. Okay, I'm not going to, because I would get into a mess if I did. But they're certainly in the notes. They can be read. All right. I mean, what do you want to happen? In the general A-set world. First of all, if you take an A-set, tensor with the boundary of the standard N cell, look at the induced map of the tensor. Oh, I should have said an interval theory. It's usually called tensor for me. So, for example, Y tensor box N for this theory is this, right? So it's a partial pairing. what those axioms do, for example, that I didn't tell you about, is it says that any such map must be a monomorphism. And there's a few other things too. If x to y is a monomorphism of a set, and this is a monomorphism of cubical sets, and this induced map is a monomorphism. In other words, they call vibration of base sets. Okay, so these axioms for an integral theory are supposed to make general statements like this happen, and there's other things too. In the A-set world, they've got an integral theory. And now I'm going to start the fixed set of monomorphisms. Any old set. So, A cells, of course, have subobjects. Okay. And I want to think about things like this. Monomorphism. That's a special sort of monomorphism. So, and it doesn't involve anything from S, but this does. If you have a co-vibration which appears in this fixed set, that's the sort of thing you want to think about. It's a product of the two things. Okay. So there's a collection of these, a set of these maps, and there's a set of these maps as you let the various parameters vary. And let's write that for the set of all such maps appearing in both families, okay? Definition. Starting with this set, the class of anodyne cofibrations is the so-called saturation of all the members of this set. In other words, it's a collection of co-vibrations that can be created by iterative pushouts and line pull limits and retracts. So this is the saturation of that set. In other words, it's a big class of co-vibrations built up from these building blocks. Thank you. As is always a fixed set of co-vibrations here, it doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's fixed with discussion, okay? And it's a set. Now, this construction is rigged so that this class of Van Dyne co-vibrations has nice behavior to us. It tends to be closed under tensor products and things outside. And I say that a map of A sets is injective. It has the right lifting property with respect to all anodyne co-vibrations. Well, that means explicitly that it has the right lifting property with respect to all of the mass that you see here. I mean, and that's enough. All right. An A set X is injective. It's the map from X to the terminal object. This is the one-point pre-sheaf on A is injective. Okay, so people that know localization theory will know that I'm starting to roll the tape at this point. You know, I'm talking about a preliminary description of the fiber objects for certain theories. All right. Here's another definition. If I give you a couple of maps between A sets, now you have homotopy between them. It's just a map from X tensor this interval to Y. Making the obvious diagram commute. Okay, and these are the inclusions corresponding to the two distinct endpoints in the interval, or two distinct points in the interval that we're assuming to exist. All right. Now you prove various things. Now you have homotopy. Of maps. From X to Z is an equivalence relation if Z is injective. How would you take care of the transitivity? Well, F0 is supposed to be naively homotopic to F1. F1 is supposed to be naively homotopic to F2. Okay, that's what the arrows mean. And F2 is naively homotopic to itself by degeneracy. Well, this is an open box. Taking values in Y, you can fill in the box and you get the missing face, which is the homotopy from F0 to F1. And that's how those arguments work. Just like they do with simplicial sets, except that you have a few more little parameters to take care of. All right. Let me write pi for naive homotopy classes and maps from X to Z. Hmm. Remember that a naive homotopy is an equivalence relation if Z is injective, but if Z is not injective, then you just collapse by the relation generated by a naive homotopy. Fact, here's the definition. Remember, we're just talking about A sets with an interval theory, this Kantor product thing, and also some fixed set of maps here, you know, and we're generating a machine. And part of this machine is the definition of weak equivalence. So weak equivalence, if and only if, when you look at naive homotopy classes of maps from X to Z, precomposed with F, that gives naive homotopy classes of maps from X to Z. This is a bijection for all injective Z. Okay, these injective objects turn out to be fibrant in the model structure, and the weak equivalences are as I've described them here. So it's a cofibration. It's a weak equivalence, rather. Cofibrations are monomorphisms. And fibrations are defined by right lifting property in the usual way. And I'd have liked to have had more time, but I don't. So I'll just write down the theorem and give you some examples. This is a theorem. Again, it's a theorem of Sosinski, but he doesn't really write it down the way I'm writing it down now. This. I call this a Swiss Army knife result because it gives model structures everywhere for everything, okay? And it's with the definitions. The category of A sets. That's the structure of a cubical model category. The proof of that, if you look in papers like either mine or Sosinski's, you see the proof is kind of an abstraction of the localization machine, okay? And so if you know localization, you basically know how to prove this, except there's little tricks in it that you won't expect. And it works for everything. And A set is proper under good circumstances. Such as F, the family of monomorphisms that you take for S consists of some morphism of A sets from terminal object to some interval I. Okay? And so now we need examples. They're defined by right lifting property. There's nothing naive about these vibrations.
No, I'm not saying naive, but that's your terminology, right? That something is.
That's weak equivalent. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the vibrations between carbon objects are both having the.
Exactly. That's something you prove, yeah. If you can remember statements from localization, they're true here. Okay. remember there was a sixth set, there was A sets, there was an interval theory, and there was a sixth set of cofibrations around which secretly we're trying to formally invert. That gives you the structure of that family of mass lambda S. Here's some consequences. A sets. Here C is a small site. And of course, pre-sheaves on that, or simplicial pre-sheaves on C, okay? And for S, this family of maps S, you could take the generating trivial cofibrations for pre-sheaves for simplicial pre-sheaves. Set of this is in the local sense, right? These are monomorphisms of simplicial pre-sheaves, which are local weak equivalences. There's a set of them, and they generate the model structure that we know about for simplicial pre-sheaves, okay? And the interval in question, well, the tensor is going to amount to product with copies of that guy. Okay, I thought it was a constant simplicial pre-sheave. And theorem that I just displayed is using the model structure. Some people like to call it the injective model structure for simplicial pre-sheaves on C. The reason for that is that, well, there's always a map to a fibrin object for this model structure. It's an anodyne map. Okay, the fibrin objects are the injectives. These anodyne maps are local weak equivalences of simplicial pre-sheaves, and the injective objects are actually globally fibrin. Okay? And you can show, for example, that a map of A sets is a weak equivalence if and only if the corresponding injective models are homotopy equivalent. That's exactly what's going on with simplicial pre-sheaves. And the cofibrations are right, the fibrin objects are right, the weak equivalences are right, so the vibrations are better to be right too. You get the full injective model structure. But of course, to construct this, you had to know something going in. You had to know, you know, something about these generating trivial co-vibrations. Simplicial sets is an example of one of these critters, where S is the inclusions of horns and simplices. The model structure that Andre didn't write down in his set of lectures is also an example of one of these structures for a suitable set S. Okay? So they're all over the place. S itself can be empty, in which case you're getting a new model structure on simplicial sets, for example. It doesn't have anything to do with inclusions of horns and simplices. It's more primitive than that, sort of a base model structure. So, whereas this is the localization machine, and you're abstracting it out, you're not actually formally inverting anything in a base model structure. You're taking a set of pre-sheaves and making a model structure out of the blue with maps that you want to invert, okay? And that has consequences. Namely, it creates a lot of model structures that you maybe didn't expect, including these primitive ones for all categories of A sets. Okay. All right, again. Let's go back to simplicial pre-sheaves. Let's take a fixed monomorphism. Okay, and constant S is going to consist of that at all. And the interval theory, again, is this. Oh, I should say that that's not right. Take F and add it to the set of generating trivial coupled versions. Use this interval theory with the ordinary product. And the theorem gives you the F local model structure for simplicial free sheaves. And this was written down by Gorse and myself. And a lot of people use this. Okay. But again, it's just a matter of checking what are the weak equivalences, what are the vibrant models, then you see. Okay. F local. No, it's not like that. You're taking the injective structure, like people like to call it, injective local structure. You're saying, I've got this cofibration here, I'd like it to be far more weak equivalence. Okay?
So it's. F is chosen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people call it Buff's field localization, but he never wrote it down that far. So. Okay. You're getting the ordinary theory of simplicial free sheaves out of this local theory. You're getting all of its localizations. And there's particular ones. This is an example of this. C now is going to be, well, F is supposed to be a decent scheme. C is smooth F schemes within this neighbor's topology. Are going to be a good site, but I remind you, you have to bound cardinalities here to make it sensible. Now, the interval theories can be anything, right, so long as they have two distinct rational points. So you can use the affine line for an interval, okay? And when you do this, this gives you the F local model structure. Or simplicial free sheaves on its neighbor site. Smoothness neighbor site. This could be more general. I mean, this machinery applies to anything. Just you might not know what's going on in the smooth case. But when F is just a choice of a rational point inside the affine line, which this amounts to, this is the motivic homotopy theory for simplicial free sheaves. Okay, this is unstable motivic homotopy theory. And again, that's just a construction of this. It just falls out of this machine that Gorse and I wrote down, but also falls out of this bigger machine, too. Well, I lied a little bit. I called this an interval, but it's not really. The underlying interval theory is just the standard one from simplicial free sheaves, okay? So we have simplicial free sheaves, this interval theory, and we formally invert this map, and we get motivic homotopy theory. Okay, but we don't need to use this interval theory. Use the affine line itself. And those two rational points, that generates an interval theory for simplicial free sheaves on the smoothness matrix site. frequency interval theory. And S now is going to be the generating set for trivial vibrations. I'll say this way, trivial local vibrations. Just like before, this is what you'd have to formally invert to get the model structure on simplicial pre-shapes back, except now you're using this interval theory, okay, different interval theory. And what comes out again is the unstable monotonic homotopy theory. Okay, you get the same thing. And again, it's just, it's an easy check to see that. This construction of the motivic homotopy category was due to Gorse and myself, and this is the construction you'll see in Morel and Zablosky. Okay? Now, the cubical model structures come from the intervals everywhere, and you can't get away from it. It's cubical model structures in all of these. There's cubical models in all of these model structures. And just about everything we know is an example of one of these things. Okay? So cubes are everywhere. I rest my case.
Especially the last example is typically cubical.
Yeah, sure.
I don't see anything simplistic in there.
No, that's right.
I don't see how to put a simplex there, but the cubes are so natural.
That's right. Well, the simplicity. No, no. There are simplicities around, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Here's one of them, you know. Right. And then there's a hyperplane, you know, and so on and so on.
Okay. So, what
does
it do with simplicity?
Maybe, except there's little problems. I mean, what you're proposing is effectively you're making a simplicial model structure out of a gadget that defines the algebraic singular functor. And